I'm Steve Bijou, and this is Down Home Corner. If you're from Canada's East Coast and proud of your roots, you're a Down Homer, and we are all connected. On this episode, we connect with John Dunsworth, Mr. Leahy from Trailer Park Boys, songwriter from Campbellton, New Brunswick, Leslie Woods Myers, and from Moncton, New Brunswick, we'll talk about all that snow with Rick Reese. Welcome to the show, Webisode 5. Now coming up, the man you know is Mr. Leahy on Trailer Park Boys, Dave Tague from Haven, and many other roles. Bridgewater, Nova Scotia's John Dunsworth will be joining us. We'll also speak with Leslie Woods Myers, a singer-songwriter from Campbellton, New Brunswick, who talks to us about a competition where you write a song a week for 6 weeks. And how bad has the winter of 2015 been back home? Rick Reese will join us and give us his take on the Moncton Mountains of Madness, known as the Snow Blues. All right, we got a fun one lined up, so let's get right to the show. John Dunsworth has been involved in the entertainment industry for more than half a century now. He was born in Bridgewater, Nova Scotia, where he still calls home, and has appeared in a number of movies, including Shattered City, The Halifax Explosion, The Trudeau Story, and the CBC TV series Pit Pony. He also appeared in the movie The Shipping News, and you may have seen him in the Stephen King series Haven, where he plays Dave Tiggs, the newspaper editor. He's also a stonemason. You can check out his YouTube video on John's YouTube channel called Get a Hobby, and you can see all the work he's done around his waterfront property in Nova Scotia. He's also a master bridge player and at one time held the internet Scrabble record for 3 7-letter words in a row. But most people know John Dunsworth as the abrasive, abusive, hard-drinking, wrong-thinking trailer park supervisor on the hit TV series Trailer Park Boys.
Feel that?
Feel what, Mr. Lee?
The way the shit clings to the air, Randy.
Shit clings to the air?
It's already started, my dear good friend.
What started, Mr. Lee?
The shit blizzard.
John, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on Down Home Corner. You are one of the most Canadian and down homers I've ever met. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
John, what do you think it means to be Canadian or a down homer?
Well, I think a true Canadian listens to CBC.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's just very little communication between the regions in this country. And that's almost on purpose, you know, care of our federal government tries to keep everything disparate and uncommunicated. But I am very fortunate because I get paid to travel all over Canada. So I'm happy as a clam.
Since we've talked on air a couple of years ago, and it's been close to 10 years, I think, now, you've done a lot of different projects besides Trailer Park Boys, Santa Quest being one of them. That was a pretty cool project. Can we talk about that?
In the movie, it depicts me going to search for the spirit of Christmas, and I'm a little jaded. And I think ever since St. Nicholas who lived 1,000 years ago or more, he was the original Santa Claus. He gave his wealth to help poor people. And we have some great examples of that. I was reading in the Globe and Mail the other day the fellow who won $50 million who's giving it to charities. And I don't know if Christmas is really Christian, but that's a kind of Christian thing to do, is to share your wealth with people of the world. But as I was saying, St. Nicholas was Turkish, so he was dark-skinned, but a lot of Republicans won't agree with that. They're on record as saying, how dare you? that his bones were stolen by pirates and taken over to Italy from Turkey. And they were split up into two towns. So one of them was Barry, and we visited Barry. And right from the get-go, they've been using the bones of St. Nicholas to have a big cathedral there where people travel in pilgrimages and spend their money in the local hostelry and avail themselves perhaps of the ladies of the night or whatever. But it's a point of commerce right from the very beginning, which is pretty disappointing. I could go on and on. I'm also doing Haven, which is a wonderful TV series. It's in its fifth season now.
Yes.
And it's shown in 100 countries over the world. But that's sci-fi. And it's Stephen King stuff. And I've been very lucky to do that in Trailer Park. And also in another series called Forgive Me, Tom Fitzgerald, a great Halifax filmmaker. And I play a priest in that. So I play a drunk and a priest and an editor. And last year I was at Neptune Theater in a comedy. So I'm staying alive in the theater and in film at the same time. So it's a wonderful gift.
Is it tough shifting gears from, say, a character like Jim Leahy to Dave Tiggs on Haven, a newspaper editor? That's a completely different role.
Oh, no, it's like I'm a puppet, you know, I'm an actor, so it's not me. I do lines that people write for me. And when you put the costume on and you assume the position, then it's not, I mean, I love variety. I like doing voiceover in the morning and for additional dialogue recording and teaching a class in the afternoon and getting up early and working on my novel and just being a gadabout. I mean, I'm a Renaissance kind of guy.
And you've always been a curious mind, from what I can tell in the interviews that we've done in the past and in the times we've talked. You seem to have this voracious appetite for knowledge.
I regret that I can't remember any more than 5% of what has passed through my eyes and ears in my life. Like, I would give anything to have a memory that captures that. But I'm very interested. I'm interested in people and world events, and I'm always mouthing off as Jim Leahy in our live shows about what's going on in the world. But I know that I only understand very little of what's going on. I mean, I rail against the International Monetary Fund and against everything from the United Nations, but I'm a great supporter of Doctors Without Borders. As a matter of fact, I send out postcards to people who want autographs, and on the bottom of the back of the postcard it says, please make a donation to Doctors Without Borders and give the address, which is, that makes me feel really good.
Well, that's pretty. That's a very honorable thing to get behind too, as well, John.
Well, I like to think so. Yeah, it's a beautiful, wonderful experience that we have traveling around. There's so much love for the Trailer Park Boys. I've found the best role in the world with Jim Leahy because there's so much recognition.
Well, yes, absolutely. The character in the show is iconic now.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the show is like Rasputin. You think the little frigger is dead and you keep trying to kill it and it just keeps coming back to life. How did you feel when you heard that the series was going to be revived?
I liked it, of course.
Good. But okay with you, huh?
Oh, yeah. We're doing, I'm doing all kinds of different stuff associated. We have something called SwearNet.
Yep.
And which is the aegis for Trailer Park Boys now. And what it is, it's a web TV channel. And I'm doing some articles on there. They're called Jim Leahy and the Liquor Stories.
Okay.
And it's really fun to do. And people love it. Cause I mean, I think half of the attraction for Trailer Park Boys is the irreverence.
Okay.
You know, because although it's not political and it doesn't take any moralistic stance, and it doesn't ascribe to any kind of recognized comedic style. It's a subtle hybrid of its own. And Mike Clattenburg and Julian, Ricky, and Bubbles were the, well, mostly Julian and Ricky came up with the concept, and somehow it's remained true to itself. And if you watch season 9 coming up in March, you'll go, wow. Because I've seen some of it. And it, I think it's the best stuff we've ever done.
Well, I got to tell you, John, when season 8 was released on Netflix, I counted those days down, you know, waiting for it as being a fan for years of the show. And when I went home that night after work, okay, and sat down, there was a bit of anxiety. I was concerned. I was worried. Is this going to hold up? Is it going to be okay? You know? And after about 5 minutes into the first episode, that was gone. And I'll tell you, the episode, I don't want to give too much away, but the episode with you and the Viagra, I don't think I have laughed as hard as I did in years. And I ran the thing back about 3 times, and I had tears coming down my face. So as a fan, I was pretty happy. And I'm guessing that's been the reaction you've been getting across the country, yes?
Well, people throw the lines back at me. You know, the only difference between me and you is a couple of drinks, you know, that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And people love. I have people that write to me on the face page, and I respond to about 50 people every day. Most of them can't believe it's Jim Leahy because they think Jim Leahy's famous, and why would they bother with them? But I don't feel famous. I feel like just a regular guy, and I feel really fortunate to have such a great career, and so I try to give back a bit.
You've always been good for that, and you've always been accommodating with me with any request for an interview. You've always been there, and I've always been grateful for that. And I always called you up on Canada Day for years, because and I remember you saying, why do you call me on Canada Day? And I say, I don't know. It's you are the most Canadian person I know. You know, you've got the values, you the humbleness, and creative is crazy, man.
I try to cultivate humility. You know, it's part of narcissism, I think.
And now, memories of past interviews with John Dunsworth. Just before the release of season 6, I did my first interview with John Dunsworth, and I was pretty excited at the time, getting to interview one of my favorite characters on my favorite TV show. And I asked friends and colleagues if they had a question for Mr. Leahy, but nobody seemed to have a question for him. They all had a question for me. What about the swearing? So it became the elephant in the room, so to speak. And I thought, what would it be like to do a bit with John playing around, and when he swore, I would swear back and then just bleep all the swear words. You had to get creative, though, because it was kind of a joke inside of a joke inside of a joke.
Have you ever had an epiphany?
Once or twice.
When you look into the abyss and you find out that nothing is there except apple pie?
Yeah, and the same abyss staring back at you.
Are you going to bloop your own?
Absolutely.
Well, I want to know what other words you can't say. Is there a...
No.
What sounds are you going to make for a word like mother...
Cuckoo!
What sounds are you going to make for, you know... You're good.
Thank you. Thank
you're
you very much.
Guy. See, you're on the edge of the shit a bit.
I am.
You are.
How you doing with the quitting smoking these days?
I think you shouldn't ask a guy that.
Oh, okay.
Well, I gave him up. I gave him up on January the 10th, and I lasted until February the 10th. Because I go for a month, and then I think, oh, man, I got this beat. I'll just have one to celebrate.
You've done that. Wait, you've quit hundreds of times. It's easy for you, isn't it?
I know it is. And there's no such thing as addiction. It's just preference. It's lifestyle choice.
You haven't thought about maybe an e-cigarette or something?
Oh, I have lots of those. I was writing, I'm working on a novel, and it's almost complete. And when I stopped smoking cigarettes on the 10th, that was the last day I wrote anything. Isn't that strange?
Wow, it's connected to smoking.
I know.
Oh, wow.
Well, for me, I love to go down to the basement with my new heat pump that's down there and sit hunched over my computer and plug away at this mystery novel I'm working on. It's very good.
So it's not an autobiography then?
Oh, no. It's fiction.
Mm.
Have you heard of my dictionary?
Dictionary. Yes, I have. All your your citizens, right?
Yeah, and it's sold 2,500 copies so far. We're halfway to Canadian bestseller.
Are you still working doing the stonemasonry stuff?
If you go to my John Dunsworth YouTube, check out Get a Hobby, and you'll see me. I'm building a theater out of stone right now.
That is so cool, too. And I've watched that very video you're talking about, and it's neat to, because 10 years ago when I was there, you showed me you had it already begun, but it, wow, is it ever grown?
I was working on the swimming pool then.
I think so.
That took 3 years to do, but it's an infinity pool right on the edge of the ocean, and it's great.
And then just to explain, this is the waterfront of the property that John owns in Nova Scotia. And did you begin this initially because of Hurricane Juan and the damage it did to the shore?
That was part of the reparations, but I started before that. I mean, I've got rock walls and stone staircases and things like that. And I just really enjoy, for some reason, I really enjoy going to the quarry and picking a ton of rocks and throwing them on my truck and hauling them home and cementing them together. It's almost like a legacy thing. Like when I'm dead and gone, what's going to be left? Very little, but this stuff will be there for 100 years.
The John Dunsworth Memorial Wall.
I don't know. The people will say, oh, I think it was Phil Dunsworth who built that. But it doesn't matter. I don't need my name associated. But I know that when I go, like the Acadians in Nova Scotia, there's no traces left of them. You know, the Evangeline Tennyson thing, you know, when they shipped them all off down to the States and ethnic cleansing kind of thing. And when you go to certain places, I go near Big Bear in the valley, and you see the dikes they built. You see the beautiful stone walls they built. There's just something really magic about that to me.
We can get back to the show. When the show was initially canceled, did you know that it was over, or did you have an idea that it could be revived down the road?
I didn't think too much about it. I mean, it was a great run, but what happened is the three owner producers decided to make another movie, and Ricky Julian Bubble said, no, we're not going to do it unless you sell us the franchise, because they felt that they were disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that they were not in control of, I mean, they were making other movies. They made a movie called Swearnet that came out last year, which is pretty good.
Yes.
And they did tried another series called Drunken on Drugs. And they kept busy in the interim, but they didn't own the franchise, and they didn't even own the characters, even though they established them. But now they do. And they have their own warehouse in Dartmouth, and we've got about six studios in there, and they're churning out stuff. It's just wonderful. They're on a tour in the States right now.
It's kind of interesting. Ricky, Julian, and Bubbles are the boss now, right?
It's great.
How did that change the dynamic? Because in season 8, it's the first time anyone outside of Mike Clattenburg would have directed an episode, and he was a focal part of the whole, say, feeling of Trailer Park Boys, wasn't he?
He was the genesis.
Yeah.
I got to direct one episode in season 8, episode 9.
How was that for you?
It was tough because I was in Haven at the same time, so I would be on the set at Haven on Monday, and then I'd drive up to Truro and be on the set of Trailer Park for a couple of days, and then hustle back. And one day I did three calls. I started at Haven in the morning and got in Truro in the afternoon, a couple hundred kilometers, and shot till dark, and then hustled back and was on Haven the next morning. So within 24 hours, I did three calls, so I'm rich.
That's triple duty. I mean, I was just going to mention that just directing an episode of Trailer Park Boys plus being a character. How do you do that? How do you switch minds from director to character?
Well, can you shovel snow and do the dishes on the same day?
I don't. Well, I was going to say I don't do dishes, but I don't shovel snow. That's not true.
No, but I mean, like some days I do a charity auction in the night and early in the day and doing something else. And I love switching gears. I think variety is the spice of life.
That's kind of your kickstart thing. You just have to be creative all the time, don't you?
No, I just have to be busy.
Okay. but it's good. I mean, you've been a busy guy through most of your career. You've worked from, even when you didn't have work, you created it. You were one of the, you formed Neptune Theater, right?
No, Pier One Theater.
Okay. But I mean, you work with Neptune Theater and you've done,
yeah.
You know, so you're one of these, like, what is in the movie Social Network where they talk about Harvard graduates going out and creating their own jobs? You've kind of done a lot of that for your career, haven't you, John?
Well, I started a casting company that's still going 30 years later, and we've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of casting for everything from the Titanic to Dolores Claiborne to, well, hundreds.
Do you have any favorite projects over the years?
All of them.
What was it like to work with Corey Bowles and Jay Baruchel as a director on this series?
It was great. Corey and I have, I taught him acting in Truro in 1980, I think it was. So we go way back. And I don't know Jay Baruchel, but he's certainly funny. And he was pretty good to work with. Johnny Torrens is one of the writers on season 9, also a director in season 9, and he was fantastic. I think season 9's our best yet, by the way.
Well, we'll look forward. That's coming out in March, isn't it?
On Netflix.
How was that, having an entire season released instead of week after week? That's a game changer for you guys, you know, having the entire season released on Netflix. How did that feel?
I don't know.
Was it scary?
No.
In a TV series, you would build, you know, like the hype would be building over weeks and then, you know, maybe hit a crescendo. But with the entire series being released at once, it's kind of all in one package. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. Not making sense is what I do.
No, but I don't see a lot of what I do. I mean, when you're on stage, you never see your performance. And a lot of time for television, I don't see my performance because I just don't see it. I have to admit, I have watched all of the three series that I'm in now, because every once in a while we start shooting next, maybe in 10 days for Forgive Me. So I will look at a couple of episodes of that and put myself back in that frame of mind. But ordinarily, I don't dwell on my own stuff. I just, people say, what's your favorite? And I say, my next one.
When doing research for my first interview with John Dunsworth, I found out that Trailer Park Boys was actually shown in Britain on the BBC. And I thought I'd have some fun with it. If you were an employee of the BBC,
yeah,
and your job was to explain this show to someone from Britain, say Prince Charles, for instance, how would you sum it up?
Actually, if he was from the South Shore and he was talking to him, and he could say, was there a plot of any kind like that? Like, she wrote that you want to kill her. Like, maybe not you, but the Queen or somebody. Like, tell me. Was there a plot there or anything like that? I mean, did that other car actually hit that Mercedes-Benz, or was a guy... They said he was legally drunk, but, you know, I drive legally drunk myself. I can do 120 to a tunnel. If nobody f***ed me, I'm fine. No, seriously, Princey Pooh. Well, oh, the trailer park boys. You wouldn't want to... You wouldn't get that, sir. No, you don't understand that, Doug. That's climbing down the ladder, sir. You've always been an upperly mobile kind of guy. You know what I'm saying? You're cute, Princey. Yeah, you really are. I love that. I love the alkaline shape of your whole features. I mean, no, look, just stand there for 3 seconds. I swear you were a statue. Holy.
Hey, if you grew up in the Maritimes in the 70s, you probably on Sunday morning, and maybe even hungover, heard religious programs with a guy named Perry F. Rockwood. I do. John Dunsworth does. And here's an old relative of Mr. Rockwood.
Support my ministry. Turn to Luke, Ezekiel, chapter 1, verse 5. And he said unto them, give money wisely unto Jim Leahy. Go to his website at Poop Over Troubled Waters. This is Perry F. Leahy signing off.
And, of course, the Leahy family has always been good with doling out financial advice.
And then, if you don't get it back in time, like, you got to make the check out and send her in real quick, because if you don't, because it's taking a week to get the damn mail nowadays, and a week to get back, no matter where in the country you come from. And then, if you don't give, you get it one day late, they charge you every single purchase you make that month. They charge you 1.5% surcharge, and it's written right into the contract. It's whatever the, like, 1/12 to 23.5% is what they're charging you. They called me on the phone the other day. The guy called me, said he could amalgamate all my debts for 18%. 18%. I said, well, listen, I'm getting 23% right now. And he said, well, you'd do 5% better. I said, who do you think you're fooling? Now, this isn't Jimmy. This is his brother, Yodel Leahy. I'm from the South Shore. So I'll put Jimmy on if you really want to speak to him.
All right. I'd like that. Thank you.
But he's...
What do you got coming up?
Well, got a book that's going to probably be published this year. And...
Do you have a title for it yet?
No.
Okay.
But it's pretty wonderful book. I mean, I read it and I go, I didn't write this. This is incredible. Now, I know that sounds a little bit egocentric, but I find it very exciting. Haven, season 5, second part's coming out this year. That's going to be fun for me to watch that. And I love working with Tom Fitzgerald. And we're going to be doing episode or season 10 for Trailer Park Boys coming up May and June. And I'm in the studio there all the time doing small episodes, 8.5, which goes on SwearNet, and Jim Leahy Liquor Stories. And then Randy and I get to tour all over the world. And so it's wonderful. I mean, it's I'm loving the dream.
It sounds like you're still having fun after all these years, John.
And last night on stage in Banff, I mean, I was laughing. Randy's really funny.
There's a certain chemistry you guys have had.
I'd say it was Laurel and Hardy, but a little quicker.
Laurel and Hardy with a bigger gut.
Yes, Laurel and Hardy.
Well, John, I want to tell you, I think this series has really evolved, and that's what I like about season 8 when I watched, and I can't wait for season 9, and I'm glad you told me that there will be a season 10, because I mean, a lot of us are hoping this continues on. It's grown over the years. Hey, here's one thing I'd like to ask you. Now, I watched an interview recently you did with somebody on CBC television, and this guy was obviously not a fan, and it was done right after the series was canceled. And basically, it looked like he had an agenda and he just wanted to crucify you. And you just sat there and so diplomatically came back with answer after answer that kind of deflected it, you know? And I know that there are many fans you've got on the show, but what do you say to people that are, you know, people like this who just, you know, really want to kind of put the show down?
I don't meet too many of them. Most people are pretty polite. I mean, a lot of people say, listen, like, I'm embarrassed to tell this, but I've never seen your show. Well, I don't mind. I didn't watch you being born either. The thing about Jim Nunn, CBC guy, He's in Don't Legalize It, the last Trailer Park movie. He's a senator. We shot up in Ottawa, and he was an Ottawa senator. And he phoned me in the afternoon of the day of the interview and said, can you come in and tape it? And I said, I'm busy right now, but I'll come in if you want to do it live. And he said, okay. So he said on the phone call, he said, when we do it, he said, I'm going to play a character or something like that. He said, I'm going to take the devil's advocate position. And I said, fine. So he really was trying to be a redneck a-hole. That's what he was attempting to do, and he pulled it off because hundreds of thousands of people have seen it, and I've gotten hundreds of messages from people describing him as being a real jerk. I'm getting tired of straightening them out. But I like Jim Nunn. He's really smart, but I think it wasn't fair that he didn't allow me to answer most of his questions. I'd get halfway through, and he cut me off.
Yes.
When I was telling him that we've saved, that Trailer Park Boys have saved lives, and I wanted to illustrate that from people depressed, people. I mean, I can tell you stories that would just blow your mind. I mean, so many of our Canadian soldiers and American as well over in Afghanistan and other, you know, shitholes of the world, they, and I don't mean the country, I just mean the political happenstance there. But
so many
people have said, man, I don't think I could have got through. I couldn't sleep in the night unless I watched Trailer Park Boys, and that brought me home to Canada, and I got to sleep. And so I am perplexed how it has. It's almost like a virus in a way, you know, a happy virus, and it is spreading all over the world. And I'm a little bit perplexed as to why that is the case. But I mean, hey, when the horse is nice, I'll ride it.
Well, here's what I think it is, John. I think if you strip away the swearing, the alcohol, the drug abuse, the hooliganism, whatever you want to call us all, okay? Now, if you take that all away, what you left are, you've got some tender moments, you got some family and community values that are shared, and there's sometimes morals and messages in these shows, and I think a lot of detractors miss that.
Well, if you look at television now, I mean, there's so many things that copy each other. I mean, it seems to be, you know, a rat eating its tail. And so, you know, I hate laugh tracks. And the thing that about Trailer Park Boys is I think it's original. Mike Clattenburg used to watch bad movies to see why they were bad. Mm-hmm. And when he put this together, he used his own sensibility, his own sense of humor, because he was the prime arbitrator. I mean, we all contributed as best we could, and he would I always play for pathos, and he would always pull me back and say, John, this is not a tragedy, because Jim Leahy is a tragic figure. You know what I mean? So many people get, you know, they get hoodwinked by, you know. They get in debt up to their eyeballs, or they get involved with the wrong people, and wrong birds of a shit feather flock together is one of my favorite ones. But and you get hooked on gambling, and you get hooked on the internet, and you get hooked on, you know, on the pornography. How many people, you know, I don't want to proselytize here, but all I want to say is it's original and it's. It's happy.
Yeah, it is in the strictest sense all the way through. It is, you know, and you when you did say, you know, that you got letters from people in Afghanistan and different vets and stuff who said, you know, it was this show that, you know, got me through some times and made me laugh when I didn't think that was possible. I mean, I think that's a story with a lot of fans. I can tell you personally, you know, I mean, I wanted to thank you because you made me laugh at two different times in my life with this show, you personally, where I mean, I didn't think I had it in me at that time, you know. I mean, one time was when I first discovered the show, and I was back east, and I'm watching this show with with a friend of mine on Sunday nights. And 2 years later, I'm sitting in your trailer that you loaned me when I was an extra on season 7. You know, so, I mean, there were some surreal moments there for me. But watching the show picked me out of a time when I didn't have a job. I was in, you know, pretty destitute times. And that show and your character really made me laugh. And then when season 8 came on, and, you know, I mean, it had been roughly a year since I'd lost my dad, and I was still in a bit of a funk. And I watched this episode with you in the Viagra, and I cried laughter, you know. So there is a purpose for shows like this out there, and it does do a lot of good if you give it a chance sometimes, you know. So personally, I want to thank you, John, you know, for all of that.
Well, you're welcome. The show... There's 7-year-old kids who watch it. There's kids now that are 18 that have been watching it for 10 years. There's 90-year-old people watching it, and lawyers and all kinds, you know, people in bike gangs and people in asylums and people in palliative care. You know, it's just, it's amazing. As I say, it's kind of like a weird virus that's spreading all over the world.
Well, it's a wonderful show, and I'm so glad it's back, and a lot of us fans are. I mean, not only is it great to interview, but it's great to talk with you because I am a fan, so it's always a pretty cool experience with me, John. Thank you so much for being on the program. I really appreciate you taking time to do this.
Well, you're welcome, Steve. And I'd like to leave you with just a word of advice. Everything comes to he who waits, as long as he works like hell while he's waiting.
Hey, it's your name Blaine, right? Hook my fucker up with some bass. Yeah. How many times have you sat out on the deck, getting wrecked, and waiting to collect a check? Knowing that's as good as life is ever gonna get. Knowing when you're from the park, it's in your blood, it's in your sweat. Debts and doubts and bets and bouts of insanity. Is it society, or is it just vanity that makes me plan to be the man that I plan to be? Instead, I can't see the forest right in front of me. For the trees, it's a social disease, and all them other MCs are on my back like fleas. Please, J to the ROC is so hard. OLP ain't even getting royalties from me. Help my fuck, they're gonna come get me, steal a whole album worth the samples, cause they'll let me. Cole stole a diamond ring to make my girl my wife. That's trailer park life. Rain made a pool in the backyard where the kids play. They're only 10 but acting hard all day, cause the apple don't fall far from the tree. What you think, they grow up and write their SATs, be Gretzky's, race jet skis professionally? Nah, dog, for that you need opportunity. And in the park when opportunity knocks, open up, it's the cops. And let me tell you, cause it's damn hard to thrive, yo. When everywhere you turn, you're confronted by the 5-0. Denied the right to be a saint. Now ask me if I'm with that shit, cause I ain't. They found 10 grams, seized my whip and took my knife. Knife. That's trailer park life. Sticky day in Sunnyvale. Julian and Ricky Cole busted out of jail. First stop the LC to buy their rum and cokes. Rolling around in the shitmobile trying to bomb smokes. Back to the park, always theirs to reclaim.
Yo, what's up, J-Rock?
I'm at the top of my game.
J-Rock, remember the time that you directed that porn?
I had my shirt off and shit out, but kept the lights on.
No, J-Rock, the porn that you made.
Well, the suckers got sucked and the players got played. I'm still kicking it, you know that I've been, though. From 6th floor school book depository window. Spraying rhymes on the grassy knoll down below. It's a sin, though, that suckers can't see. My rhymes are the branches and I am the tree. The shit is dopey, ain't got no candy. So you best get out my eyes before I take you down like Bambi. My rhymes are harder than that big old gut on Randy. My joints are tighter than the nerves on Mr. Leahy. I jack my chips from Trevor and Corey. Sorry. Walk a mile on my Nikes and feel the pain and strife. That's trailer park life. Trailer park life. That's trailer park life.
That's J-Rock and trailer park life. The Songwriters Association of Canada for the last few years has held an annual competition wherein you write 6 songs in 6 weeks. Singer-songwriter Leslie Woods Myers is participating in this year's competition, and she joins Down Home Corner now to tell us how that's going. We're connecting to Campbellton, New Brunswick, and we have with us Leslie Woods Myers. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thanks, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
So it's a song a week for 6 weeks.
It's a song a week for 6 weeks.
And they give you the subject matter.
They give you the subject matter. So say, for instance, week one, Matt Dusk, who is a well-known Canadian crooner, he gave us a couple of references as to what type of music he's looking at, and he gave us specific names of songs and wants us to write a song for him. We have up until the 6th week to submit that one. So that one's just kind of on the back burner right now for me.
Okay.
But week two was a producer by the name of Rob Wells, who's worked with Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato and quite a long list of names. His challenge to us was to have us write and produce a pop rock top 40 song in the style of Demi Lovato or Selena Gomez, would be sung by a female vocalist. So it's something that you need to write with a female vocalist in mind, appealing to a demographic of 13 to 18-year-olds. So, you have some people, some songwriters involved in this 6-week-long challenge who are like 55-year-old men, mm-hmm. and they're saying, it's been a long time. Like, I've never had a pair of pink shoes on my feet. So, you know, it's very hard to get into the mindset of a 15-year-old girl.
How do I channel my inner 15-year-old girl?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they were having quite a time of it because some of them are more, you know, folk roots kind of writers. And it causes you to really stretch. You really, really, really have to dig deep because if it's not in your usual genre, if you're not a 15-year-old girl, then it's really difficult to get there, to put your mind there, to have the feel for that beat of music, for, you know, that rhythm and those chord progressions. And then you have to consider the vocal range of the artist you're writing for, right?
Of course.
Because, you know, Matt Dusk is in one range, Selena Gomez is in another, and mine may be in another. So where I would normally write, I can't write because I have to write for what they've specifically asked for.
It sounds like a very, very vulnerable position to be as a songwriter.
Oh, it's scary as all get out.
And that's very healthy. That's a good thing, right?
Absolutely. I'm telling you, week one, hormones had a little bit to do with it. and I was in a panic. I mean, panic when this first challenge came out because I didn't know what to expect of this challenge.
Of course.
It's all, until now, in previous years, they've always kept it restricted to their members. So when they post anything, it's quite private, and so you can only sort of pick up pieces here and there on the web. Like, you can't really get a good, clear picture as to what the challenge is about. So I really didn't know what I was getting into. I just kind of jumped in with both feet, and away we go. And so when they came out with this first challenge, I was like, oh, my God, Matt Dusk. Like, he's crooner. I can't do that. and then you start to... It took about a week for me to absorb it. You know, I just kind of, I went on an Oreo binge. And
that always helps.
Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah, I did. In a major way. So it took me the whole week probably just to, you know, figure out what the heck I was doing and what I had gotten myself into. And then I sort of got settled into it a little bit as I started to, you know, play around with some chords and stuff and some ideas. And I'm telling you, since then, it's been like they created a melody monster because I just, everywhere I turn, there's a melody popping into my head. I'm running for the Zoom. I'm running for the phone. I'm running for something to put it on.
So you're really thinking as a writer right now. It's taken over the rest of your life kind of thing.
Well, not kind of. It really has this past week because I haven't made dinner for 6 days. The vacuuming is not done. Luckily, I have a wonderful husband and a very patient daughter, but holy moly, it's just, it's crazy. 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. It was 3:30, I think, last night.
That's
and I got to bed after submitting that. It's not so much about the end result as it is in what I'm discovering about myself.
Yeah.
And what I'm discovering in knowledge that the others are sharing on their Facebook page, on the Songwriters Association Facebook page. And what a wealth of information and talented people on there. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. I've always found it. Any creative idea that you have, if it's good, people will carry it for you once you put it out there. You know, that go-to thing happens where it starts and then something else takes over. But Brenda Best and I were talking about songwriters and the best songs, you have to kind of go real deep inside yourself to a lot of different things. Now, with a project like this, where you're under a deadline to do that kind of thing, does that help you to go there quicker?
I'm finding, and I'm not sure if it's just me, but I'm finding the chord progressions are coming much faster. The melodies are coming much faster. The arrangements are coming much faster. The lyrics are not. Normally, the lyrics do, but I think it's because in those instances when I'm writing for myself, I'm writing because I have something to say.
You may be as a writer opening up another part of your mind to write from that you haven't as much before, you know? So, taking on a project like this is kind of a double-edged sword in a way, you know? It's rewarding, it's challenging, it's scary, but yet it's pretty well guaranteed to make anybody who would do this a better writer. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I had presented my challenge back in October that I was going to sit myself down and write and complete one full song a week. And started on that, but then, of course, with a new computer and a new digital audio station and whatnot, I had to try and figure all of this out, big learning curve. So I didn't quite reach that goal. But what this has forced me to do, I mean, 3 songs in 1 week, they're written, they're complete, they're recorded, they're with multiple instrument tracks. The only thing I didn't complete was the mixing, which I'm terrible at anyway. But at the end of the week, I had 3 full songs to add to what I have, right?
Yeah.
So it really forced me. It really did. It forced me to sit down, and I had that deadline, and it made me a little more self-disciplined than the challenge I had presented myself with.
You raised the stakes, and that's all important, right?
Yeah. But it's really strange. It's a bizarre thing to be writing for somebody else because you really have to take all things into consideration, and of course the sex. I mean, you know, Matt Dusk is a guy. Like, it's hard to to look at writing from a guy's perspective or to look at life from a guy's perspective. So anyway, it's a really, really interesting thing. And something else with this challenge, Steve, is that if you you know how big co-writing is in Nashville and just in songwriting, in music industry anyway, as far as songwriting is concerned. And most songs that are on the radio are written by 2 to 10 songwriters.
I know.
And so co-writing is where it's at, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah. So what they're doing within Sax Challenge is all 110 participants are invited to collaborate. So it can be by way of co-writing. It can be by way of lending your skills to another writer who maybe doesn't play keyboard. Well, you hook up with a keyboard player, or you hook up with a producer, or you hook up with someone who is stronger in lyric writing or someone who may be, you know, better with chord progressions or whatever. But they really, really promote that.
Mm, so, I think it's wonderful for the industry overall, like all the way through. It's just a,
yeah.
a really good thing.
Yeah, it is. And it's really great that they extend this online, because normally, you know, being in more remote areas like where we are in Hamilton, it's you don't have access to that kind of thing that the larger centers have. And so if you want to do, say you want to take part in the date with the demo, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can do it online now with Songwriters Association.
Wow, so you don't even have to actually show up anymore.
You don't have to show up anymore.
That's beautiful, because years ago I had belonged to the Songwriters Association of Canada, and I had attended a few of those episodes, Date with the Tapes, they call them, and those were so cool to explain. You walk into this room with a bunch of other songwriters, and then there's usually a panel, and they sit down and they critique your song, and you're doing it in front of all your other people, all your other, you know, peers to that level, I guess, so to speak, at that time. And it's a wonderful experience.
Sure it is. But now this week's challenge came in yesterday. It's we've been invited to write a song for a music supervisor of a music placement agency. I think she's based out of Toronto. And it's for some type of children's television commercial, so they need a 30-second spot.
Hmm.
Yeah, so we have to come up with this 30-second thing that needs to be cleanly produced by the end of the week, because, of course, with music licensing opportunities, nobody's going in there to re-record it. It's not the same as pitching to an artist, right?
Of course.
So if Coca-Cola says they need a commercial or a song for a commercial, then you send them the song you have, and that's the one they put on the television if that's the one they choose. And if it's not cleanly produced, then it's not considered because they can't use it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the challenge we have this week. So it's another week ahead of no dinner for Joe. Sorry, honey.
Well, we'll have to call Dixie Lee or Al's Pizzeria at this point.
I think he has a direct line now.
There might be a song in it, Leslie. There might be a song in it. You never know.
So I don't even want to go there.
Now, can people follow your progress at all, or you have a blog?
Yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a website, LeslieWoodsMyersOfficial.com, and I have a blog on that website, and I've been posting a couple of times a week, and I posted one late last night before I went to bed at about 3 o'clock. I have no idea what I wrote. I should go check that out this morning or today. But, yeah, they can follow the progress on there. And I also post on my Facebook page as well. Just, you know, for anybody who's interested in writing or and for you, it's something fun to follow because you're also into songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for maybe it's not everybody's thing, but it's there for those who are interested.
Well, we'll wish you lots of luck with this, Leslie, and maybe some other people will get involved with that as well. But I think I got a good feeling we can look forward to some collaborations with other local writers maybe in the near future with you.
Well, I sure hope so. And, you know, if other local musicians are interested in joining Songwriters Association, or even, you know, just getting together privately, it would be worth it to set up, a songwriting circle or, in the round, I think they call it in the States. But, just where you have a few musicians on stage, everybody's sitting on a stool, everybody has their acoustic, and you just, you know, take your turn from one guy to the next, introducing your song and playing your originals, and it's nothing loud, and there are no covers allowed. It's just three or four songwriters sitting on a stage, and it's a nice way to promote original talent, local talent. And it's also nice to just get out and see something different and enjoy, support music community and that kind of thing.
Mm.
So even if it's not through Songwriters Association, it's certainly worth it to set up our own little community here.
Yeah.
Or our own little network, you know.
Might be worth time going after maybe trying another songwriters club back home, you know. Maybe the time is right again. And like you say, with the internet and stuff, maybe you can even broaden that. You never know.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Maybe we'll do podcasts for you.
There you go. I like the idea. We are all connected.
Produced by Steve and Mike. Yeah, that sounds good, eh?
I'm liking it.
I think we're onto something there.
Hey, we're always looking for new ideas, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, listen, congratulations on the project. No matter how you
Thank
do
you.
It, I think you've done well just for jumping in, and I think you're doing some great work with it, too. So all the best to you, and we'll look forward to maybe one of your creations will end up in a major commercial or a major song, and who knows if Demi Lovato or this 55-year-old guy is going to record your tune.
Yeah, you never know. Stranger things have happened, I guess.
Hey, listen, long as they get the name right in the royalty check, that's what really counts.
That's right.
Thanks
that's
a lot, and
okay, Steve.
All the best back home. Thanks for being on the show, Leslie.
Okay, and thanks so much for having me.
We're gonna do a little rocking now. I say an old Minglewood style.
That's Matt Minglewood featuring Jeff Healey on guitar and East Coast Blues. I try to keep the show as undated or generic as possible, but the snowstorms in winter of 2015 has just been so gigantic and so big, I kind of wanted to document it. So let's head back to Moncton. Connecting once again to Moncton, Rick Reese, thanks for being on the show again. How you doing, Rick?
Steve, how are you today?
We're doing good. It's been a tough winter for you guys down there. It seems like the most popular story on Facebook or the most shared thing, whether it's pictures or videos or what have you, seems to be the massive snowstorms of 2015. Would you agree?
Snowbelt, I'm telling you, it just not stopped, man. I think I put more miles on the snowboard than my car in the last couple of weeks.
What's it like? Like, how big are the snowbanks and that kind of stuff? How would you describe it?
I mean, the best way to describe it, I've got a pretty powerful snowboard, and it just doesn't, it cannot put the snow on the top anymore. And, at the beginning of the season, I always kind of cut my driveway pretty wide in anticipation of how much snow we're going to get. And it's just getting narrower and narrower as we're going here. And, I'm not far off, and this is not an exaggeration. I am not far off from either mirror on either side of the car, rubbing the snowbanks on the way out of the driveway.
It becomes an obstacle course getting in your driveway every day. It's the driveway slalom. Do you feel, isolated or claustrophobic or anything like that?
I live on a secondary road in the country just outside of Shediac, and it's when you're coming down the road, and if somebody's coming towards you, one of us has to pull into like a driveway and wait for the other guy to go by. Never seen that before, and I've lived here for a few years. And I mean, just to put it in perspective, Steve, on Christmas Day, everybody around Moncton was going around beating the drum. Well, it was plus 15, it was plus 18 degrees, and everybody was saying, wow, it's green Christmas, it's so warm, and it's raining. Well, that was on Christmas Day. So on New Year's Day, there was zero snow on the ground, green grass, no kidding. So that's only, a couple months back. But by the end, from January 1st to now, we've already hit, our annual snowfall. So zero snow by January 1st, and now there's 200 centimeters on the ground now.
Wow. What's funny is I remember growing up when I was a kid, most of the big snowstorms used to happen up in the North Shore, Campbellton, Dalhousie areas, the North Shore. And then Moncton didn't seem to be hit at all. And now it seems to be the opposite. It seems the North Shore gets a lot of gets bypassed a lot of these big storms, and it seems like the Moncton area is getting hit harder.
You're so right. I spoke to someone from Campbellton, and they said, your father's in New Brunswick and Campbellton, the area we launched, Campbellton's white gold and, the West Coast region white gold. That was a winter marketing slogan to get snowmobilers and whatnot, winter activities to happen in the North Shore. And after they launched it, all the snow moved to Moncton.
And so did you.
We're Canadians. It gives us something to talk about, something to complain about on Facebook. Oh my God, look at all the snow. In a few months, time from now, we'll hear people complaining on Facebook, and me included, saying, it's so hot, I'd be glad when it cools down, right?
Absolutely. And then they'll be sharing the video that went viral of the train going through the snow around Salisbury. Anyway, thanks for checking in with us, Rick. We'll wish you the best of luck digging out and hope it melts and you don't get hit with anything else from now till summertime.
Good stuff. There's a picture on my Facebook that I posted. It's the city snowblower downtown Moncton blowing snow on a bank. And it is, I'm not going to guess, but I think it's 60, 70 feet high snowbank. So take a look on my Facebook. You'll see that big old big snowbank with a tiny little snowblower on the bottom.
It's like the ultimate king of the castle mountain.
It sure is, and no sliding allowed on it. It would be fun, though.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thanks, Steve. Talk soon.
And that's our show. Thanks so much to our special guest, John Dunsworth. I'm grateful to John for so many things. John has always been accommodating for every interview request I've made. He helped me become an extra on season 7 of Trailer Park Boys, got to hang out with the cast and crew, and then went on adventures with John, including a boat cruise on the Atlantic aboard his boat, the Emerald Princess, with him and his family, and other things that we did that I can't tell you about because, well, not everything was legal. Visit John's website, johndunsworth.com. Look for Mr. Leahy and Randy on tour across Canada. And remember season 9 of Trailer Park Boys on Netflix starting March 27. Thanks as well to Leslie Woods Myers, who joined us from Campbellton. If you'd like to check out Leslie's progress in the Songwriters Association of Canada's challenge, go to soundcloud.com or her website, leslywoodsmyersofficial.com. Songwriters Association of Canada's website is songwriters.ca. Thanks to our resident snowman, Rick Reese in Moncton, for joining us as well. For more on Rick, visit rickreese.com. Down Home Corner is produced by Mike Cicada and Steve Bijou. Visit us and like us on Facebook. And remember, every share on Facebook helps us reach more and more Down Homers around the world. Thanks so much. I'm Steve Bijou. Catch you next time on Down Home Corner. Remember, we are all connected.